Power up fall projects with Ego at Lowe's. Every tool delivers power beyond belief. So whether it's leaves, limbs, or lawn cleanup, count on Ego to deliver the power, performance, and innovation you need. And now for a limited time, save up to $60 on select blowers, chainsaws, and pole saws. Shop Ego today at Lowe's. Offers valid through 10-1 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Morning, morning, morning.
It's the boss.
I call shots like a boss.
In the gloss. My lip gloss, I only rock clear.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
I got that sunshine in my pocket. You got that good sun.
Good evening and welcome in. I'm David Gow, the boss. Sitting next to me, Carla Dawson, the gloss. And you, my friend, have just returned from Las Vegas, where you were there for the big Sunday night football game, the Chiefs and the Raiders. I know that you, and for those who don't know, are a longstanding Raiders fan. You're dressed in silver and black today. What was it like to sort of go to the new mothership, to Las Vegas, and experience the new Death Star?
Okay, you mean if I take away the game, the actual
For a minute.
If take away the game, it was awesome. It was unbelievable. It looked like Halloween night, which is what you would expect going into Raider Nation.
Yes.
The stadium is pristine. You could eat off the floor, literally. The 90-foot Al Davis torch is the biggest 3D printed object in the world.
So it's sort of a shrine to Al Davis in that regard.
Well, it says Al on the front. So, that, yeah. I would. It's,
Davis
there's like
not
a
required.
Shield, and it says Al Davis.
Everybody
not
knows
required.
Big Al, right?
But some of his cool quotes along the side and everybody from when you walk in the door to where you're going to your seats to where you're getting your beer. Hi, welcome into the stadium. Did you have a good time? Thank you for coming. So glad you're here. It was very un-Raider-esque. Everyone was so nice. It was a blast other than the game. It was really, really awesome. Marshmello was halftime, which was super cool. And Steve Aoki and Lil Jon were sitting in our section. And if the stars were out in Vegas.
Vegas knows how to entertain, that's for sure.
It is, and then, you know, afterwards, we walked across the big bridge to go to Mandalay Bay because it was so crowded. I mean, the bridge looked, it was just packed in with people moving, and I thought, oh, it's going to feel creepy. Everyone, Chiefs fans, Raider fans, like, everyone talking, everyone nice, everyone calm.
Well, that's because you're the gloss. No one's going to be mean to you. But you headed out to the casinos late at night.
Oh, then. I'm not telling.
You're not telling what stays in Vegas.
But we had
what
a post-game dinner at Hakkasan. Lots of Chiefs fans around us. Everyone was really nice to each other. It was really kind of interesting.
Oh, that's great.
But the stadium's fab. It's fab.
When we come back, we're going to unpack that game. The question, the big headline on the table is, are the Chiefs back now? Do they figure it out? Do they get in sync? You were there firsthand. Was it that the Chiefs were so good or the Raiders didn't show up very well last night? We'll get to that when we return here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
It's the boss.
In the gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. And when we went to break, we promised we'd get the debrief from Carla Dawson here. The gloss.
Do play Misty for me. I just want to this voice. We do have to address it. You know.
Oh, the voice.
Kevin's been really nice. He hasn't said a word about it, right?
Well, look, there are three of us, four of us here in the room now. We got
taking the fifth.
Carla, David, Kevin, and my voice. We're all here together. My voice is different tonight. Yes, I'm doing my Scott Farrell imitation, very hoarse, but I'm ready to play in pain. I'm ready to go even when I'm not 100% because
taking one for the team.
It was an exciting weekend of NFL action.
My gosh.
Sunday awesome. Night football, you were at the center of gravity there in Las Vegas. Now, the narrative this morning is the Chiefs have finally figured it out. They fixed what ails them. They're now in first place in the AFC West. Here they come. They're going back to the Super Bowl. Are you ready to get back on the Chief bandwagon?
No. No. I mean, I don't even have to think about it. What makes me the saddest about it is that, you know, I'm a Cradle Raiders fan, and I'm here to tell you that the Raiders could make anybody look like they're back after that performance last night. You know, it was really sad when I saw I didn't think they were going to do well versus the Giants 2 weekends ago because it was after the Henry Ruggs whole situation had happened and how much can a team take at one time. But I thought this would be a great bounce back game. I didn't think the Chiefs looked good against Green Bay. That 13-7 win against the Jordan Love Packers did not impress me at all.
Yep.
And honestly, they had a three and out right when the Chiefs had a three and out right when the game started. The Raiders were rolling. I thought, this isn't impressive. Patrick Mahomes missed a lot of deep shots. He does the dink and dunk, and that's what's working for him right now. But dang, I hate to admit it, but my Raiders made the Chiefs look great. They made them look great. And what I would say is the Raiders were uninspired. There was terrible play calling. I could not get over it. Zero defense. Questionable calls with the refs, but that's always going to happen. They underused their receivers, most especially Darren Waller. I mean, who plays Where's Waldo? How about Where's Waller?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. His number never got called. I don't know what's going on. And overusing Josh Jacobs. It was a really disappointing performance by Las Vegas.
Now, Patrick Mahomes had a great night,
oh,
of course.
Amazing.
70% passing, 406 yards, 5 TDs.
Oh, believe me, I saw them all.
And no picks.
Whew.
Well, one thing he did do was throw the underneath route a little better. He was more patient. He wasn't trying to force it downfield. Defenses
he got comfortable. Believe me, he looked great as the game went
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, defense have taken away that deep route from him, right? They'll cover two. They're really making him throw the ball. Kelce is a force underneath. He's awfully hard to stop. They do have the weapons. But it is interesting to say, they don't have Clyde Edwards-Helaire yet in the running game. So they're not fully functional. And it doesn't feel like you felt like the Raiders took advantage of a Chiefs team that has been flailing in the last 6 weeks.
No, they didn't. And it's so disappointing. I mean, every single first down for Las Vegas was Josh Jacobs up the middle.
Yeah.
Well, I felt like I was watching the Houston Texans again. I'm like, oh, my gosh, we are going back to Bill O'Brien days. Are you kidding me? And then they would put in Kenyon Drake. 12-yard run on first down. Awesome. They put him in on second down, on third down. Up, three and out, we're done. And, you know, I have to say things did not go the Raiders' way anyway. I mean, DeSean Jackson, his first game as a Raider.
Yes.
This beautiful, like, 40-plus yard pass.
He still has speed. He got deep.
He got the speed. He got the catch. And then credit, a Chiefs defender just popped it right out.
Yep.
You know, things like that happened in the red zone. And then Kansas City on fourth down, a successful fake punt. It looked like the Raiders were a high school team. They had no idea what to do with it. It was the easiest fourth down conversion I've ever seen. And then the penalties. Oh, my gosh. I never saw the final stats because I was there in the stadium. But Alex Leatherwood, come on, buddy. If I see one more false start, dude, you are a rookie, I realize. But we are now at week 10 here.
Yeah, like, he's a first-round draft pick of the Raiders. They were counting on him to really be a force in the interior part of that offensive line.
Oh, wow. They just played undisciplined, uninspired football that was really, really disappointing. Really, really, really disappointing, but I was not going to let it steal my joy because I got to be in the Death Star. It was amazing. The whole atmosphere was incredible. I think Kansas City did exactly what they needed to do, and God bless them. The Raiders just gave Kansas City a gift. They gave Kelce his mojo back, you know, Patrick Mahomes. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens next week with the Chiefs. But to me, I didn't see a complete team yet for them, but I saw Andy Reid's brilliance with the fake punt and all kind of things that he did. So
One of the things I heard you mention is how odd it is to have the Raiders sort of arrive in Vegas. There aren't legacy fans there, right? When you looked around the stadium, I know there are a lot of people in black and silver and worshiping the Raiders as they should, but all those people are brand new fans. I mean, surely some traveled, but the community of Las Vegas is just getting acquainted with this team.
Well, it's interesting. Not only are they just getting acquainted, but I was there the day before and, you know, had my Raider gear on. And I thought this is a safe place to wear it finally. If I'm not in Oakland or L.A., I mean, the only other safe place is Las Vegas. Most people that I ran into were like, oh, we like the Chiefs. Or there were more Chiefs fans than Raiders fans. Even people that were not a Chiefs fan did not like the Raiders. It was really interesting to me. And it really made me step back and go, this isn't a homegrown team. This is a transplanted team. And it's tough. I mean, they really don't have a huge fan base in Las Vegas at this point. The other thing that I noted, which I think two observations. I do not think the Chiefs are fully back. I think the Raiders gifted them a way to look good.
And we'll learn a whole lot more next week because the Chiefs will host the Cowboys, and the Cowboys should look like they were back yesterday.
Absolutely.
So that should be a great matchup, a real test for the Chiefs.
100%. That it is going to be a great test, and I will be really curious to see. I'm going to watch every snap of that one. But the other thing that I learned is, I hate to say this, I just being in Las Vegas, watching the news, seeing the television, you know, the newspaper headlines, what everybody's talking about, we are getting the updates on the Henry Ruggs situation, on the John Gruden situation, who's now suing the NFL, and Henry Ruggs, who's on house arrest, and he's waiting possibly life imprisonment, and, you know, for the death of that girl after a DUI. It is everywhere you look in Las Vegas, all day, every day. And I just think that a team cannot fully recover from two massive losses. I mean, obviously, John Gruden's was self-inflicted. So was Henry Ruggs. But the ripple effect from that, I think, into that locker room, Derek Carr, such a faithful man, someone who really was tight with both Gruden and Henry Ruggs, just at such a crossroads of what do you do? Because both these guys did something that's very, very wrong. Both guys are gone, probably rightfully so, for sure. But I think what it has done to this locker room and that it's constantly in their face every day, all day, I don't think it's recoverable this season. I think it's too massive.
Yeah, they're going to need the offseason to regroup, probably bring in a whole new coach with a fresh voice and do a big restart. I don't know. What about Mike Mayock? Do you see him back there next year?
I do.
Because his draft picks have not been great.
His first draft was fantastic. But you're right. I mean, this last draft, the Henry Ruggs draft, I think out of the five,
well, that was Ruggs' draft. That was not good. Then Leatherwood, this year's the first round pick. This was his past year. That was canned.
Disaster.
But we'll see. I mean, they've got some talent there. They were off to a good start until the wheels went off this, it started with Gruden and then obviously went to Ruggs. So we shall see how they can rebound. But I do think it's going to take the offseason. It's a lot to recover from. I mean, the other longer-term question that I find sort of interesting
It's about more than football. This is where a locker room galvanizes with your head coach, with your guy under center, with your number one receiver. And when two of those three are up in smoke in major, major situations, I think it's really unrecoverable for this season.
The longer-term question, of course, is, what's it like to have a football team in Vegas?
I mean,
thought that there are 24-year-olds running around with a lot of money in a city that never sleeps, Ruggs was driving home in the early, early morning hours.
3 a.m.
If he were in Kansas City, he might not have been out till 3 a.m. There might not have even been a place open till 3 a.m. that would have enticed him, right? But in Vegas, there's always going to be that attraction, always the next thing to go do. Then the late-night crowd is rampant. And you just wonder whether that's going to undermine the Raiders going forward.
I love that you bring up that point because I do think it is. These guys are young. Henry Ruggs is 23 years old. You know, they're coming from Tuscaloosa, Alabama. This stuff ain't happening in Tuscaloosa. Just me walking the streets on Saturday, going somewhere. It was 5 o'clock in the day. I mean, bright sun. And there were topless women grabbing men to get them to come into these clubs. And I'm like, whoa, okay, well. Wow. I think the temptations and the, not immaturity, but just the youth and what these guys have not seen before, this is a lot. And we knew that it's called Sin City for a reason. I think it's really tough.
Well, we are glad that you have returned from Sin City. And when we return, we're going to get a chance to visit with Pat Forty. He's the SI senior writer, and we're going to ask him about college football's top four. Who should be in it? It'll be Pat Forty when we return here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
It's the Boss.
And the Boss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They're close, convenient, and known for guaranteed everyday low prices and excellent customer service. From professional parts people you can trust. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. All right, joining us now on the Progressive Insurance guest line is senior writer for Sports Illustrated, Pat Forty. Pat, welcome to the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Hey, good to be on with you all again.
Great to have you back. Let's start with your view of all things college football and how you think the top four teams should be ranked.
Right now, my major disagreement with the committee is centers on Alabama. I think that they're too high at number two, so I would have it Georgia 1, Oregon 2, Ohio State 3, Cincinnati 4, Alabama 5.
Mm. Yeah. So do you, Cincinnati, you've got a soft spot for them. Make the case for Cincinnati.
Well, undefeated, first of all.
Yep.
Has probably the second best win in the country to date, having won at Notre Dame by double figures, a win that keeps getting better the more Notre Dame wins. They control their schedule about as much as the Patriots controlled their schedule in the AFC East when they were playing a bunch of bad teams there.
Yep.
You know, they play their conference, whatever their conference is. And, you know, nobody said that the Patriots couldn't go to the playoffs because they played the Jets and the Bills and the Dolphins when they were all bad. So I don't necessarily hold their conference schedule against them. Indiana fell apart at the time they played Indiana. The Hoosiers didn't look nearly as bad as they do now. So, you know, I think that there's reason to stick up for them, although they quite honestly have not been very impressive the last couple of weeks.
Pat, I agree with you on Cincinnati, and I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, you're right. Your schedule is what your schedule is. This is the conference they're in, you know, for this year. But let me ask you that. Do you think that, like, playoff contention should be determined by their performance versus good competition, which Notre Dame was a fantastic win, or whether or not you can run up the score on a South Florida, a Tulsa, or a Navy? I mean, you know, they struggled, obviously, against South Florida. Initially ended up with a 45-28 win, but is that enough?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question because, you know, scoring margin factors into almost mm-hmm. every, you know, metric and that sort of thing. If you watch the South Florida game, which I did, there was never a chance they were going to lose. There was just, are we going to win by mm-hmm. a quote-unquote, you know, impressive margin? And I think that does get a little bit into the weeds on things like that. Well, they only won by 17 instead of 30. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know that that should matter that much. Now, the Tulsa game, they legitimately nearly blew. I mean, Tulsa had six tries from inside the six-yard line to score and then potentially tie it. So, that was not a good game. But also at the same time, Alabama nearly blew it against LSU that same weekend. So, you know, I think you can go through everybody other than Georgia and find games where they did not play very well.
We're talking to Pat Forty. He's a senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Okay, I want to shift gears to the Big 12. It really didn't surprise me that Oklahoma lost to Baylor, but University of Texas, how do you explain what's taking place there?
It's a dumpster fire. I mean,
it is.
I think the explanation is they might have hired a bad coach. I'm sorry, but there was not a lot to recommend Steve Sarkisian for that spot other than the fact that he was drawing up great ball plays for one of the best offenses in the history of college football. For a quarterback who's a rookie star in the NFL, for a running back who is a rookie star in the NFL, for a receiver who is a rookie star in the NFL who won the Heisman Trophy, for an offensive lineman who's starting in the NFL, all those guys are rookies. Patrick Stan on defense starting as a rookie. You know, like, I could call plays for Alabama and you're going to at least score 30, you know, maybe not 45, but you're going to score 30. So, you know, I think that they spent a lot of money getting rid of Tom Herman and a lot of money bringing in Steve Sarkisian. And for now, the results are just not there. And he probably didn't inherit a great hand. There may be some quote unquote culture issues in terms of buy-in. But that's the coach's job to make those players buy in or convince them to buy in, if not make them. And so Steve Sarkisian is absolutely failing the test to this point.
Okay, Pat, we are connected at the hip because I have been following Sarkisian's career. First of all, I'm a Trojan alum. We can't even speak about what he did at that program. But, you know, at Washington, he didn't have a winning record. I mean, I was like, where is this hire coming from? Because, honestly, you said exactly, I won't even repeat all of it, but you're right. anyone can do what he did at Alabama because it's such a well-oiled machine. And, you know, he did with what he had. I'm so confused. I was so confused when they hired him. And you look at what he's done with this program, the fifth consecutive loss for the Longhorns. It's the first five-game losing streak since 1956. And, you know, his quote, when he was asked, you know, are the players tuning you out? I don't know. You're going to have to ask them. What? You're the head coach. You need to know if you have your players or not. So my question to you is, Pat, I agree with you 100%. We are aligned on this. UT should have called us before they hired him. But is there any light that can come out of this sarkness? Tell me.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, we'll see. He's going to get a second year, and we will see if there's a dramatic shift in attitude and buy-in. And if there is, they're supposedly, right now at least, they've got a great recruiting class committed. We'll see if they all sign and if they all show up, and we'll see what the transfer portal does, either coming or going. But, you know, there's reason to believe they will have more talent next year. Now, in college football, freshman talent doesn't equal immediate success. So, you know, are they going to be demonstrably better next year? I think they have to be for him to get a third year. You know, I think things are so bad this year that the normal give a guy 3-4 years is out the window. So he's going to need to perform next year. There'll probably be some staff changes this year. Defensive coordinator, I would imagine, mm-hmm. will change, and maybe some others. But it's a very bad situation at this point.
We're talking to Pat Forty, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Okay, this is a hard one for me, so I'm going to put it out to you. Who should be the Heisman winner? Who's the front runner this year?
Boy, it's a crapshoot. It really is. You know, I mean, I am certainly willing to take a look, and I am a voter at Jordan Davis, the nose tackle for Georgia. Certainly a nose tackle has never won the Heisman Trophy or come close to winning the Heisman Trophy. But if you want to talk about the best player on the best unit on the best team, that's him. You know, I think Kenneth Walker III from Michigan State is a viable candidate. Kenny Pickett, the quarterback from Pittsburgh, is a viable candidate. You know, you can find some people here and there, but it's not the usual suspects. I think people have gravitated to the quarterback at Alabama, the quarterback at Ohio State, because they're putting up nice numbers. Okay, I mean, fine, but I don't know whether Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud's having a Heisman year. I think I'd rather look elsewhere and think a little bit longer about what I want to do with my ballot, at least, and go from there.
Okay, let me ask you too, Pat. Dan Mullen, is he going to survive at Florida? I mean, they had a big win this weekend over Samford. Not Stanford, which even that wouldn't have been impressive, but Samford, okay? So they had this big win. They're all excited. But Samford put up 52 points on the Gator defense. I mean, does he survive this? I know they love Dan Mullen, but my gosh, what a disappointing season for the Gators. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much they love him anymore. It's gotten as sideways there as it has at Texas. That was a terrible win, no matter how Dan Mullen tried to spin it. And he kept trying to spin it again today. Right. I mean, they have, Florida football has been around since 1906 and had never given up 42 points in the first half until against Samford, a team with 63 scholarships. You know, they play Alabama? Nope. Georgia? Nope. Ohio State? Nebraska over the years? Nope. Nobody's ever scored 42 against them except for Samford. And that's disgraceful. And for them to put up 52 for the game is just mind-boggling. So my feeling is they will probably, unless they have a real come-to-Jesus meeting and things change, I don't see them beating Missouri or Florida State. You lose one or both of those games, and it's over. It may still be over even if they win them both, but I think if you lose one of those two, especially if you lose in the swamp to your rival Florida State, who's not very good, then I think it's over.
Pat, we've got about 1 minute remaining, even less than that. Who's your favorite for the LSU job?
Oh, boy. You know, Jimbo Fisher, another pretty strong denial today. Pretty strong denial.
Yep.
So I'm going to say this ends up going to Dave Aranda or Mel Tucker. And I'm going to go with Dave Aranda, who was a star defensive coordinator there when they won the national championship, and has done very well at Baylor. I think better than most people expected. So I'm going to say Aranda is my favorite at the moment for LSU.
He's the best in the business. He's Pat Forty. You can read him at Sports Illustrated. Pat, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, y'all. Thank you.
It's the Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Well, now let's go out to the Progressive Insurance guest line. We're joined by Travis Rogers. He's host of Travis and Silva. You can hear that on 710 KSPN Radio in Los Angeles. He also does Rams pre and post, so he has all things Rams, and we know the Rams are facing the 49ers tonight. Travis, welcome to the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Hey, guys. How are you? It's good to be back with you.
Well, it's great to have you. Would love to get your expectations for tonight's game. What are you looking forward to see out of the Rams?
Well, it's funny how much it's changed in just a couple of days.
Yeah.
You know, it went from, you know, we'll see if they can bounce back after a pretty ugly loss to Tennessee, to we'll see Von Miller, maybe he'll debut. And then all of a sudden they get Odell Beckham Jr. a few days ago, and how is he going to look with the team? And then you fast forward a day after that, and Robert Woods injures his knee, and he's done for the season. And now you've got that entire thing into it. So there's a whole bunch of different things. I'm optimistic. The Rams have looked really good this year. The 49ers have not. It's been a weird deal because the Rams and the 49ers, the Rams have been good pretty much since Sean McVay has come over, and the 49ers have been a little bit hit and miss. But for whatever reason, the Rams really struggle with San Francisco. So it should be a really good game tonight, but I do think that the Rams will take care of it.
And do you think part of the struggle, Travis, is you've got, you know, Shanahan and McVay against it? That's a storyline. And Josh Norman, if he plays tonight, it's going to be Josh versus OBJ because that's a situation. But I know the talk this week has been obviously the OBJ pickup. But the loss of Robert Woods Friday to a torn ACL, how does that change the Rams, not only schematically, but emotionally as well?
You know, I think you're right. I think it's the second thing first. I think it's a much more of an emotional loss than anything else. He is one of those guys that is so important to your team, not just because he catches a lot of passes or scores some touchdowns or those things. He certainly does that, but he does all those other things that just don't necessarily show up. He's one of the best blockers on the team. He's an incredible emotional leader. He gets the hard catches over the middle of the field. He's just a tough guy that would get that extra yard. He plays a pretty regular part of their rushing attack, too. At least once or twice a game, they'll hand him the ball. So they're going to miss him a great deal. As far as schematically goes, I think that's a really good point, too, because, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. coming over was going to kind of be the guy who's going to run down the field, maybe get some big plays, and then they'd find some other ways to use him. It was kind of a luxury as opposed to much more of a necessity. And then, obviously, Woods goes down on Saturday or Friday of practice. The announcement was made Saturday. And now you got to see if you can try to use Odell as a replacement for Robert Woods. They're obviously very different types of players, but I think one of the reasons the Rams went out and got Beckham to begin with was that their depth at that position was not great. You know, they've got Cooper Kupp. He's having a great season. Woods is having a good season. Van Jefferson has improved a great deal. But beyond that, there was not much depth after the departure of DeSean Jackson. So now all of a sudden another guy goes down, another guy comes in. I don't know how much we'll see from Odell tonight. I think it'll matter how much you see from Odell maybe a month from now once he's been around and kind of starts to get a better feel for the offense.
Because Odell's had just a Saturday practice and a Sunday walkthrough, right? Or has it been more than that?
No, yeah, he didn't even officially sign with the team until Thursday. So he's going to be pretty limited, I think, in what he's available to do. I mean, as far as what he understands in the offense, maybe they can do a small handful of plays where you can put him in. But, you know, what makes the Rams so dangerous offensively is that they have so many different guys that can do so many different things, and they can kind of mix and match. And all of a sudden you get a guy that doesn't know the playbook, doesn't speak the Rams language. That's going to be a little bit of an adjustment period. I think hopefully by the time they get to maybe the middle of December that he'll be up to speed. But, you know, as far as tonight goes, I think they're going to have to do it with Kupp and Jefferson and tight ends and running backs.
We're talking to Travis Rogers. He's the Rams pre- and post-game host on 710 KSPN in Los Angeles. Travis, I want to ask you about the way the Rams go about building their team, because they've obviously loaded up a lot of talent this year, but it's some sacrifice to the future. They don't have draft picks. They've used draft picks to trade for veterans. And, of course, they won't have much cap room going forward. Is it sort of a Super Bowl or bust attitude right now this season?
For sure. I mean, absolutely. They've kind of been taking this approach for the last few years. You know, the NFL trading deadline isn't terribly meaningful the way it is in baseball or the way that it is in the NBA, where you see a bunch of players move around, except for the Rams. You know, the last few years, the Rams have made a move at the deadline nearly every year. You go back a couple of years ago, they get Jalen Ramsey. You get this year, they get Von Miller. A couple of years prior to that, they went out and got Dante Fowler from Jacksonville. And these were all very highly regarded players and made a big impact. But like you mentioned, at great cost, they do not have draft picks. They do not have a ton of financial flexibility moving forward. Part of that is that, you know, it's kind of a Los Angeles thing that if you're not really good, we're not really that interested.
Yeah.
You know,
live for the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if you say, oh, you know, trust us, in 5 years we'll be good. Okay, let me know when 5 years is up and I'll check back in. They're not really just going to go through the process very often. So that's part of what will be interesting to see is that if it does work, if other teams kind of change their philosophy. And this isn't a perfect comparison, but I go back to when Sean McVay came into the league, and all of a sudden he basically refused to play any of his players during the preseason. And you fast forward about 2 or 3 years later, well, that's about half the league, if not more, where nobody's playing in the preseason, because I think it's been demonstrated that the Rams haven't had a ton of injuries and all the things that come along with that. So if the Rams can kind of just keep saying, you know, you can take my picks, I'll take your good players and turn that into a Super Bowl, or at least get close to it, I'll be curious to see if other teams follow suit. If they fall flat on their face, I don't think you'll see anybody try this for a while, but I do like that they're all in, and it's kind of out of necessity here in town. You know, the Lakers are all in, the Dodgers are all in, and certainly the Rams are going for it too.
Okay, I love that you brought up the Dodgers and the Lakers, because there's always something to talk about with them, Travis. So I want to switch gears to baseball real quick with you. Corey Seager, probably their biggest free agent person that they got to deal with at shortstop. I know they've got Trey Turner. What do you see? What are you expecting from the Dodgers with Corey Seager?
Well, I think it's more up to Corey Seager than it is to the Dodgers. I think the Dodgers would love to have him back. I think they'll be willing to pay the going rate, if not a little bit above and beyond that. I think they went out and got Trey Turner as a safety valve in the event that he decides he wants to go somewhere else. I think there was a little bit of a misunderstanding or misperception of, oh, they got Trey Turner because they're going to let Corey Seager go. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's what it was at all. I think it was, we have Trey Turner in the event that Corey Seager decides to go somewhere else. I think they really want to keep him. I think they would love to have him here long term. You know, outside of Mookie Betts, I think he's their best player. I think that he would be missed desperately if he did leave, but I don't think it's up to the Dodgers. I think they'll offer everything they can, and beyond that, it's up to him whether he wants to stay in LA or not.
That's so interesting. Why wouldn't he want to stay? I mean, it seems like that clubhouse is tight. Obviously, they're incredibly successful. What would make him want to go?
Well, it's a great question. Maybe just a change of scenery, perhaps. He's an East Coast guy. He grew up over there. Maybe the Yankees come in with an opportunity, and maybe he visions himself as a Yankee. I don't know. I'm with you. You know, I'm terribly biased because I'm a Dodger fan, and that's where I would want to be. But even if you just kind of put that aside, they win every year.
Right.
They're going to be in the mix. They spend the money. They play in front of a full house just about every single night. You know that the Dodgers are willing to do whatever it takes to acquire players to continue to be in the mix. Unless somebody comes in just totally off the top rope with some incredible amount of money that the Dodgers just think is incredibly irresponsible, I do think he has a really good chance of coming back, but you never know. You know, maybe he's always wanted to go play for team X, Y, or Z, but hopefully not. Hopefully he stays in L.A.
Okay, I'm going to put my homie hat on for a minute here in Houston. So we're in the same situation with Carlos Correa. I mean, he's all but gone. I mean, he's removed Astros from his Twitter feed and everything else. Any chance, I know how much y'all hate us here, for sure, any chance that the Dodgers would pick him up? I know the Yankees would, as much as they hate him too. I know they would, but what do you think in L.A.? I mean, honestly.
I think there is a 0.00 chance of that happening.
Okay. Wow.
I just cannot. We were actually talking about this on my show on Friday, and the amount of anger from Dodger fans is real, and it has not dissipated over the last few years. And, you know, the guys that are still left in Houston, whether it's Bregman or Correa or Altuve, they're the ones that bear the brunt of it. And so, no, we had people calling our show saying, I will never go to another Dodger game. I will never turn it on TV. I think it is an absolute non-starter. He's a great player. Nobody argues that his ability, but I just can't see it happening.
You know, I almost appreciate that more than like what New York's going to do. They yell the F-bombs. They can't stand him yet. They may be the one signing him. So you know what? Hey, gotta give it to the Dodgers fans for being being true. I totally get it.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And if I'm being entirely honest, I think I put myself in this group. This Dodger run over, I guess it's been in 9 years now, won 8 division championships, been in the playoffs every year, won a World Series, went to 2 others. And if the Dodgers had a second World Series championship, and obviously they were closer in 17 than they were in 18, this feels almost dynastic that Clayton Kershaw has a slightly different career arc, and all these different players feel probably a little bit differently about where they are, and that one didn't go the way that it was supposed to go. There's this anger, this animosity, this resentment that goes along with it. It is, like I mentioned before, it hasn't faded. If anything, it's gotten more intense. The fact that the Dodgers did not win this year, the fact that they haven't gotten back another world championship other than the one they had in the shortened season, there's just still this real palpable anger from Dodger fans directed at the Astros.
Oh, I shouldn't have brought it up. I hope you still like us.
She brought it up. We're talking just to Travis Rogers. He's a show host on KSPN 710 in Los Angeles. Before we let you go, just got to ask you, another team in L.A. that seemingly is championship or bust this season, the Lakers. What's your take on them thus far in the year?
Wildly disappointing.
Oh, boy.
I think that if we're being optimistic, I think you can say, okay, it's a work in progress, and we're only about, you know, what would it be, 12 or 15% of the way through the season. So, you know, how you're doing so far really doesn't matter a great deal, but that's being optimistic. The reality of it is the Lakers have played 14 games so far this season. 11 of them have been home games, most of them against really bad teams, and they're 8-6. And they have 2 losses to Oklahoma City. They lost to Minnesota the other night, one of the worst teams in the league, and they got crushed by them.
Almost LeBron lost to the Spurs.
More than half the games. It's been a really rocky start. Russell Westbrook doesn't look to fit in particularly well. The rest of the guys that they picked up have been kind of all over the map. It has been a really bad start. The good news is there are 65 some odd games left, so plenty of time. But so far, very, very underwhelming.
Yeah, at least it is a very long season, no doubt. Okay, Travis Rogers, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Good talking with you guys.
It's the Boss
and the Gloss
on the SportsMap Radio Network,
presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and it is great to be in studio with you, Carla Dawson, having just returned from your boondoggle in Las Vegas to watch Sunday Night Football at the Death Star. Raiders falling to the Chiefs, but a fun time for you in Vegas. You were there Saturday and Sunday night, right?
Yeah, and today. Just got back today.
Okay.
That's why my eyes are looking like this.
Now, the question on the table, you growing up, well, you went to USC, and there was no bigger Trojan than O.J. Simpson.
Oh,
right?
Boy. We're going there?
Yes. Well, my understanding is that he was in Vegas this weekend, and I understand that you were in Vegas this weekend. And you were a fan of his.
Oh.
Growing up,
doing this first hour, I cannot believe it.
This is based on a true story. It truly is. Kevin, help me with this. Do you know Carla was there and OJ was there, right?
I think OJ lives in Vegas. Does
okay.
he not? So
I didn't know that he lived there. But
remember, that's where he stormed the hotel room to get back some of his paraphernalia.
Well, that was his stuff, though. So
yeah.
Exactly. Just ask him.
Rightfully getting back what was his. Yeah.
So there's an amazing little video going around. It went viral. It's on Twitter, of OJ. At a nightclub somewhere in Vegas, there was a blonde woman. In fact, she looked a lot like you.
Now stop.
Just a little bit like you, maybe. And she was excited to see OJ. Hey, OJ, this and that. People were filming it, and she was back and forth with OJ, and he was smiling, and she said, look, OJ's here. He's alive, and he's out. He's free. And then he turned over to kiss her, and she immediately moved away.
That was awesome.
What the? Oh, I wanted the kiss.
That was, he's probably not used to that.
No, the guy, I will say this. He looked great. For a guy who had to live in prison for a long time, and he's not young anymore. I mean, he's well into his 60s.
And so let's be clear that OJ and I were not at USC at the same time.
Oh, no.
So I do want to make that clear right
you just
front here.
Went to USC, saw the statues, all the excitement about OJ.
Yes,
you
it was long
far,
before my time.
Far younger than OJ, which also makes it somewhat questionable why you two were hanging around in Vegas together, given the age disparity. But we'll leave that out.
We will leave that out.
So please. He went for the kiss. This is out on Twitter. And the responses were amazing. The best one, some of them I just cannot read.
No, you can't go there.
But the best one was, if the kiss don't miss. By the way, when he went to kiss her, she moved away.
She did.
Dramatically. So he didn't get the kiss in there. And her comments are, if the kiss don't miss, then you must dismiss. And so that's it. He is acquitted. OJ on the loose again in Vegas.
Ooh, boy.
You missed him, didn't you? You're sorry you didn't see him.
Yeah, I saw a lot of action in Vegas. I didn't need OJ on top of all of it.
What was your most memorable moment in Vegas? You were there for 2.5 days. You walked the strip. You went to the Death Star. What stood out to you? What visual impression jumped out at you the most?
It's not a good one. No, Allegiant Stadium was fantastic. That was worth everything.
Okay.
But I think it was the topless women on the sidewalk that were, like, repping people to get into clubs, like, literally grabbing men.
Tell me more.
They were topless.
This is the first time Kevin's paid attention all night.
It was so Vegas. That's all I can say. It just, nothing ever surprises me.
All right. When we come back, you know, a week ago, we were speculating on where OBJ would land. Remember, we were on the cusp of hearing that he was going to clear through waivers. He's now landed with the Rams. There was all kinds of speculation. We now know.
We can thank his dad for the video montage. Woo!
When we come back, we're going to decide, did he land in the right place or did the Rams make a mistake? That up next when we return here on the Sports Map Radio Network.